Now, we've got coming up...
You don't even answer my questions.
After this, the most dangerous man in America...
I've been hearing a lot about him.
Jared Taylor.
You're listening to Sunday Night Safran with John Safran and Father Bob McGuire on Triple J.
I think things are... there's going to be far more important ethnic issues discussed.
Hang on, and you're on...
You're on Triple J. I'm John Safran.
And this is Sunday Night Safran.
And that's Waleed Ali standing in for Father Bob. And we're going to be talking now about the race realist movement. And who we've got on the line, I think from New Jersey, is Daryl Lamont Jenkins, who's a US anti-racist and founder of the One People's Project. And joining us from Richmond, Virginia, is Jared Taylor, who's a current editor of American Renaissance and a self-described race realist. How are you guys?
Doing pretty good.
Excellent. So maybe, Daryl, you can start off. What is the race realist movement?
That is a term that's used by conservatives in the U.S. and now around the world by people who by conservatives who simply don't want to use a different term other than racist. Because the truth of the matter is that the idea that somehow that they are race realists is a rather pretentious one. It's almost insulting. They are basically folks who are within those highbrow conservative circles that try to suggest that they are studying the idea of hate mongering. And they have their little writings, and many of them are academics who talk like this. Many of them are associated with mainstream politics in one way or another. And because of this, they try to pass themselves off as a little upper crust racist or what have you.
Sure. So what expression would you use, Daryl, instead of race realist?
I would simply call them racist as they are. I mean, I don't like playing with new terms like race realist or racialist or anything like that. Call them what they are. They are racist. They are hate mongers. They are bigots. And just clear away all the muck and just get straight to what it's all about.
Jared, I imagine you've got a different definition of race realist.
Well, I see. This is a little bit like asking a Jewish leader to tell you what fanatical Islam is about, or on the other hand, asking a Muslim activist to describe Jewishness. Hardly a likely way to get an interesting answer or a realistic answer. Race realism has to do with the fact that most people in Western countries, certainly in majority white countries, refuse to recognize that race is an important part of individual and group identity, and that most people, no matter what race they are, generally prefer the company of people of the same race. Also, it's a recognition that people of different races tend to build different kinds of societies, and that it's perfectly legitimate for people of a particular race to prefer the society built by their own race.
Jerry, can you tell me how you're defining race, though?
Well, I think asking people to define race is something that only comes up in utterly artificial terms. In the United States, there are people who pretend that race doesn't exist, and yet, if they're asked whether or not it's legitimate to offer racial preferences to blacks or Hispanics or American Indians or Eskimos who want to apply to university, they have no trouble at all describing.
Let's take a real example. The conflict in Darfur, which people in Darfur described as a conflict between Africans and Arabs. Was that an interracial conflict?
I would call that an interracial and as well as a religious conflict.
They were all the same religion.
Well, the Arabs tend to be Muslim, and the black Africans tend to be animist or Christian.
No, they were both Muslims. The Arabs and the Africans in Darfur were both Muslims. They were killing each other. But from the outside, I couldn't tell who was an Arab and who was an African. They looked the same to me.
Well, they can certainly tell. Human beings are tribal, no matter where you find them. And, in fact, wherever you look, all around the world, where people are killing each other most diligently, it's because people who are different in some fashion, whether it's on the basis of race or religion or tribe, are attempting to share the same territory. Human beings simply don't, by and large, care to mix with people who are that much different from each other. There are exceptions to this rule, but human nature tends to prefer the company of one's own religion, one's own tribe, one's own ethnicity, race, etc.
And what's a current example in America of how you think people group together, Jared?
Oh, for heaven's sake, there's something called the lunchroom test in American schools. And if you walk into any absolutely any American school that is not homogeneously one race or one ethnicity, you'll find that when people are free to mix, they will sit down and have lunch, the blacks generally together, the Hispanics generally sitting together, the whites generally together, the Asians generally together. Again, there are some exceptions, but people automatically and naturally sort themselves out by ethnicity, by race, by language, all that kind of thing. Point of race realism is to recognize that this is an important part of human nature and try to stop fighting it. Let us build a society on the basis of an acceptance of human nature rather than its denial.
Daryl, what about the lunchroom test?
The lunchroom test is bogus. I mean, the fact of the matter is the lunchroom idea just comes from the fact that people associate with who is more or less from their community. I come from Somerset, New Jersey, and my lunchroom when I was in high school, I used to sit with anyone. I used to sit with people who were from my neighborhood. But because the neighborhoods are becoming more and more mixed, everybody's going to associate with folks who are not just of their race, but of other races as well. It has no bearing on who we are as a people, who we associate with whatsoever. That's rather simplistic way of thinking, and it has nothing to do with who we are. I mean, look, you cannot decide what people are going to prefer or what their human nature is going to be. Let people decide that for themselves. We see nowadays that people are coming together in fellowship more and more, especially since the laws that were preventing us from doing so 40 or 50 years ago have been eradicated from the books. You have to ask yourself, if this is human nature for us to segregate ourselves, why do they have to impose laws on us that disallowed us from associating with each other, from disallowing us from marrying each other and having children? It doesn't work in the reality. That is really race reality, is that race does not matter in the grander scheme of things.
Jared, does things like Croats and Serbs at each other and Protestants and Catholics at each other in Northern Ireland, does that suggest fights are more over culture than race per se, seeing we're just dealing with white people in those cases?
I've been saying all along that human beings are tribal, and race is only the most obvious tribal identity. Yes, the Croats and the Serbs, they decided they couldn't live together. The Czechs and the Slovaks, for heaven's sake, they're very similar, but they speak different languages. They wish to be separate. That is part of human nature. For Mr. Jenkins to pretend that the fact that all around the United States children segregate themselves at school, that people segregate themselves by neighborhood, he says that somehow you have to have laws to keep people apart? That's really quite hilarious. Residential segregation in the United States today is at a level that's hardly any different from the 1950s and 1960s. And the idea that race somehow doesn't matter, explain that to the students at high schools all across California who end up in race riots, for heaven's sakes, because blacks and Hispanics do not get along. They don't like sharing the same schools. Tell that to the people who are in American prisons, where there are, again, race riots, in which people are killed. No, the idea that race somehow doesn't matter. Again, try to make that point to someone who goes to a typical church in the United States. Churches where people are free to associate with people of their own choice, not who the government tells them to associate with. Churches in the United States, 85% are at least 90% one race or the other, because that reflects people's genuine natural choices and their own preferences.
Now, Daryl, we're going to get you to respond to that after this song.
You're listening to Sunday Night Saffron on Triple J.
This is Triple J. You're on Sunday Night Saffron. My name is Willie Daly. I'm not Father Bob with a different voice. He hasn't got a cold or something. He's just not here. So I am. Is that okay, John?
And we're talking from America. We're talking to Daryl Lamont Jenkins, who's a US anti-racist, a black guy who's the founder of the One People's Project. And we're talking about the race realist movement. And we're also talking to Jared Taylor, who is considered the head of this race realist movement, or at least one of the heads.
Hey, Jared, I want to ask you a question, because I'm struggling to get my head around this term race realist and how it describes what you're talking about. Because you're saying that people prefer their own tribe, and we define those tribes in all sorts of different ways. And so when we throw, for example, an example at you of white people killing each other or something, then you say, well, that's not race, that's religion. So it's not really about race realism at all then, isn't it? It's just about the fact that we form groups that are our groups and we form groups that are not their groups.
So it's to point out that race is one of the important dimensions along which those groups are formed. No, race is simply one aspect of tribalism, but it's a very important one. And in the United States, the idea that somehow race doesn't matter, as Mr. Jenkins seems to pretend, that's resulting in all kinds of things that ultimately could lead to a very unfortunate situation in the United States, in particular for whites. One is that if race doesn't matter, it doesn't matter whether the country fills up with Arabs or Tasmanians or Guatemalans or Haitians, it will still be the United States. In fact, it's very clear when you get large numbers of people who are not of original European stock, they create societies that are different from those parts of the United States that are still heavily European. And in fact,
Hang on, but that's a strange distinction you're drawing, because if you had a whole lot of migration, say, from Germany, would that be a problem or would that not be a problem?
It would be a problem for a generation or two if they spoke no English. But in the United States, immigrants from Europe, after three generations, are utterly indistinguishable from other European immigrants in terms of likelihood to go to college, per capita income, likelihood to marry outside of their original European ethnic group. They assimilate. They integrate. Whereas people who are not European, we have had people in the United States for hundreds of years, many, many, many generations who have not assimilated, and those are American Indians and blacks.
That's a chicken and egg argument, though, because if you have a society that is racist, so that you have people of different races, particularly non-white races, in lower socioeconomic groups and so on and so forth, and you have other people who are white that kind of get accepted into the club, then of course they're more likely to integrate in the way that you describe because they're being accepted to do that.
You can call it a chicken and egg problem if you wish, but if you have blacks who have immigrated to the United Kingdom or to Canada, those countries have histories of race that are vastly different from that of the United States. And yet, in those countries as well, despite the fact there's been no Jim Crow, no segregation, no slavery, you'll find the black and white phenomenon almost identical to that in the United States.
Did you also find that the class distinction between blacks and whites is in some ways similar?
Look, you can look for ad hoc arguments wherever you find them, but if you find that wherever groups who are racially different are asked to share the same territory, whether it's in Canada, whether it's in Australia, whether it's in Germany, and you find that they don't mix well, that tells you something about human beings.
No, but the point is that where they're racially the same, it still happens. That was the example of the Balkans. It's the example in the United Kingdom, in Northern Ireland. That is, race is not the distinguishing feature there. Surely all this shows is that human beings just have this capacity to subdivide. Wherever you put us, we'll come up with divisions and we'll figure out ways of fighting about it. But there's no necessary reason that it has to be race over something else, or it couldn't be class, or it couldn't be... I mean, there's all sorts of decisions we can make about that.
Race is an extremely important human dividing line. In fact, it's the most volatile and most obvious human fault line because it's biological. Races are, if you think about it, the largest extended family to which people have a kind of instinctive biological relatedness. And just as people prefer their own children to the children of strangers, without necessarily having any dislike of the children of strangers, it's perfectly normal to feel a kinship to those people to whom one is genetically closer. It's natural, normal, it's inevitable. And the whole point of race realism is to try to get society to stop denying this. See, you're pretending that race hardly matters, that, okay, people do sort themselves out tribally, but if they sort themselves out along racial lines, probably that's somehow wrong or bad. I'm telling you that it's a natural thing, and we should recognize this rather than deny it.
No, I'm telling you that there are lots and lots and lots of examples in history of black people killing black people, white people killing white people. And when those examples are thrown at you, what you do is you say, oh, no, but that wasn't about race, that was about religion, or that was about culture or something, which just demonstrates that race isn't the key signifier.
You see, in past centuries, there was not that much opportunity for people of different races to mix.
So they found other reasons to kill each other. That's all right.
In Britain in 1600, there were so few blacks, you certainly couldn't have a race riot. Now that you have blacks in Britain, in London, in Brixton, in other parts, so you can have riots of rate that are racially motivated. My point is, yes, human beings are tribal, but any attempt to mix different races and tribalism recedes into the background, and people sort themselves out primarily along racial lines. You find the same in Australia. You find ethnic divisions, you find religious divisions. People are very, very conscious of race. Aboriginal people in Australia, there are all kinds of divisions and problems because of this attempt to get two separate people to live together.
Daryl.
The interesting thing about that is that he keeps talking on in the terms of European culture. About 100 years ago, maybe even 50 years ago, you couldn't talk like that. You speak of this tribalism. He talks about there wouldn't be any conflict, any race riots in Britain maybe 100 years ago. But, you know, you had just mentioned that you had the Irish Catholic versus the British at that time. You still do. I've spoken with one well-known white supremacist here in the States, and she talks about how she, even today, had problems, her being of German heritage, marrying somebody who was Dutch. And who was of Dutch heritage. I mean, the tribalism went back and forth between whites even now. And for him to suggest that somehow, I mean, so yeah, he does have a point that there were at one time that there was some sort of, I guess, apprehension when you're dealing with people who goes across their cultural boundaries. But the fact is that we do it regardless, that we do manage to get together in fellowship and build things and build a better society. I mean, he talks about how we will be different, but we are still the United States, even as more people of color become more and more assertive in this society. I mean, And speaking for myself, I'm dating somebody who happens to be white. There doesn't seem to be any problems. I mean, and going back to what he was saying about how hilarious it was when about laws keeping us separate, that's what happened. The Jim Crow laws that he mentioned did that. Why did you need laws like that if people naturally segregated themselves? Somebody saw folks that did not segregate themselves as a threat, and they passed laws against it. Those laws have been lifted, and more we are coming together. We are working with each other. We are living with each other. We're not sitting in separate tables in the lunchroom anymore.
Jared, you grew up in Japan. Were you actually born in Japan?
Yes, that's correct.
How long were you in Japan for?
I was a racial minority for 16 years.
Wow. So that's interesting. How do you think that informed where you are today?
Well, as a matter of fact, I think it had absolutely no effect on my thinking today. I was a conventional liberal on racial matters until I was about 35 or 40 years old. It was only gradually after knocking around the world I began to realize how wrong orthodoxy is on this question. But Mr. Jenkins is suggesting somehow that the notion of marrying across German or Dutch lines, that might be something as much of an obstacle as marrying across racial lines. See, that is the silly kind of talk that people get into when they try to pretend that race doesn't matter. As I said before, European immigrants to the United States, they blend quickly and effortlessly. And somehow the idea that because at one time, hundreds of years ago, Germans might not have wanted to marry Dutch, that somehow reduces the significance of race is just reasoning in a completely illogical way. He also suggested that there's something about race realism that is oppressive to others. There's nothing oppressive about it at all. What we are talking about is complete freedom of association. And if blacks prefer to associate with blacks, and many of them do, and no one complains about that, let them do so. But also what I'm saying is if whites prefer to associate with whites, prefer to marry each other, prefer to go to school with each other, let them do so. It's complete freedom is what we're looking for. It's simply to be left alone.
Is anybody stopping white people from marrying white people or black people from marrying black people?
No, of course not. And yet, you cannot have let white people have their own schools, for example, or have their own neighborhoods, have their own societies, have their own clubs. No, that's if not outright against the law, society will come down upon them like a ton of bricks. Whereas if Hispanics or if blacks or Asians wish to have their own groups, their own student groups, their own professional groups, that's just fine. Whites are the only group in the United States who are not allowed to have...
Yeah, well, to an extent, but I noticed when Barack Obama was running for office, he had to invest a lot of time in assuring the public that, you know, he wasn't a black separatist. He didn't, you know, there was this black church that he went to, but he's no longer part of it. He had to, you know, it wasn't acceptable for him in the mainstream public's eye to be a blacks-only president.
He didn't actually spend that much time working on that, but unquestionably, yes. If he had come into office talking like Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or some other absolute person who identified entirely with race, it would have been very difficult to get white votes. And, of course, he needed white votes because...
But doesn't that just... That's my point. It's like people don't find it that acceptable for people of other races, in inverted commas, to be isolationists in modern America.
Oh, for heaven's sake, we have something called the Congressional Black Congress. If you are an elected member of the United States Congress, you can join. If you're not black, you can't join. It exists for one purpose only. It's to examine legislation from the point of view of what's in it for us black people. That's the only reason it exists.
But in the overall scheme of things, aren't there quasi-white groups?
Name one.
The Tea Party, this is something you bring up. You say that if you go to an opera, the audience there are going to be white people, and if you go to the Tea Party, they're mainly going to be white people. So they've just formed their own quasi-societies, just like you criticise in the blacks.
There are Irish cultural clubs. There are all sorts of cultural clubs that relate to white cultures and white nations.
Yes, St. Patrick's Day parade in America.
And you think that somehow a St. Patrick's Day parade is examining legislation or American policy from the point of view of what's good for white people?
Well, the point is there's no need to because they're in a dominant position.
Do you think an opera is somehow an expression of the interests of whites who are tired of racial preferences for non-whites? No, the examples you give are laughable. There is not a single organization in the United States that says, yes, we think it's important to consider laws from the point of view of the interests of whites, which would have any kind of mainstream respectability or traction in the United States.
Daryl, do you want to respond to that?
Well, first, I would tell you, first off, when you talk about something that's quasi-white, even Mr. Taylor and some of his acolytes here in the States like to refer to the Republican Party as the white party. And, in fact, they have been working on some sort of a notion to try to encourage the Republican Party here to focus solely on white people. Unfortunately for them, the Republican Party recognize that they will not survive if they do that, and they are pretty much rejecting them, which speaks to who Mr. Taylor pretty much represents. I mean, you just hit on something. The concern is not whether or not whites can have their own schools, whites can have their own churches or their other organizations, but the fact that the schools and the organizations that he would prefer pretty much attack anyone that isn't white. The efforts that they make are done at the expense of other races, and people get upset. And because this is not the society that we want anymore. We had that kind of society 50 years ago. We saw the damage that it did to pretty much three quarters of this society, and we do not want to go back to that. We will not go back to that.